Thank you, Mr. Fay. So we have to dodge all these microphones up here. Today, I would like to continue in our examination of the Greek words that have been translated as prayer, because it's important to gain a better understanding of this, because this is each one of these is a facet of how we talk with God. So far, we've talked about prayers, petitions, supplications, and intercessions. Today's word is UK, and no, not the country. It's spelled E-U-C-H-E. Strong's concordance number is G-2171. Now, this word appears in the New Testament all of three times. So let's turn to one of those right now, James chapter 5 and verse 15. Here in James chapter 5 verse 15 is actually the only place where this Greek word is typically translated as prayer. James 5:15 reads, "And the prayer of faith will save the sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven." So the prayer of faith is the word we're looking at here. The other two places it appears, we won't be turning there, but it appears in Acts 18, verse 18, and Acts 21, verse 23. But in both of those verses, the word is translated as vow. It's a promise. So what I want to examine today is the concept of how a vow is a facet of our prayer and see how we can apply it in our own lives. So let's ask the question first, what is a vow? What does it imply? Well, Thayer's definition says it's a prayer to God or a vow. Well, yeah, thanks, that was helpful. So looking at Strong's Concordance, it defines it as a wish expressed as a petition to God. The word is actually derived from a vowel, a verb that I'm not going to try to pronounce here, but it's Strong's G2172. So to help us gain a better understanding of what a vow is, I'd like to take a look so we can understand what it means to make a vow. To understand that, since we're already here in James chapter 5, let's take a look at verse 16. James 5:16. "Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective fervent prayer or petition of a righteous man avails much." So the phrase here, "and pray for one another," could just as easily be translated as "and to make a vow for one another." Not necessarily just to pray for one another, but to make a vow for one another. And what does that mean? Well, to make a vow, when we make a vow or we make a promise, it starts out that we have a strong desire for something to happen. We make this vow that says, we want this to happen. I'm going to commit myself to this. And so here, James says, "Confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another." Or perhaps we can think about it as to have a strong desire for the well-being of our brethren. It's the beginning of a vow, to have that strong desire, to wish something to happen, to have it come about. Paul expresses a strong desire when he's speaking to Agrippa. If we turn back to Acts 26:29, and this is another case where the verb form of vow is used. Here in Acts 26 and verse 29, "And Paul said, I would to God that not only you, but also all who hear me today might become both almost and altogether such as I am, except for these chains." Paul is saying here is, I have a very strong desire, Agrippa, that you and everyone here who is hearing my testimony before you would come to an understanding of what God is promising, of the salvation that he is promising to humanity. Paul wanted that. Even while he's standing there in chains, his love for his brethren was such that he had this strong desire that they would come to know the truth of God's word and an understanding of what he has set before us. And while we're not going to turn there, as we look at this word in other uses, you see this is something which is very common, very prevalent in Paul's writings. The expression of this strong desire that all who he has come in contact, who is taught, who have heard him, he expresses this strong desire that they do come to an understanding of what Jesus Christ was here for and the message that he taught. Now, Paul obviously knew that it was not going to happen immediately, but it was still his strong desire. And that's what this word here, when it says, I would to God, it's a desire expressed to God that this would eventually happen. So we can see that when we make a vow, we're expressing a strong desire. But there's more to it. It's not just that we have a desire, but that we're willing to go that next step. Making a vow or making a promise goes further in that we're committing ourselves to something. There's a commitment there. It's not just, I hope something happens. It's, I really hope something happens, and here's what I'm going to do to see that it can come about. So let's take a look at some of the characteristics of vows or promises. There are probably obviously more than what I have listed here, but these are beneficial because they help us to understand as we get later our conversations with God and the promises that we make to him. As we just alluded to, making a promise involves a commitment. You know, it's an obligation, but not one that someone else puts on us. When we promise something, we are giving ourselves an obligation. We are binding ourselves to what we're saying. It's our choice. It's something we've committed ourselves to. Consider the example of Jacob. Let's turn back to Genesis chapter 28 and verses 20 through 22. Here in Genesis 28, verses 20 through 22, Jacob is fleeing from Esau. He's going back to his mother's family. Verse 20. Then Jacob made a vow, saying, if God will be with me and keep me in this way that I'm going and give me bread to eat and clothing to put on so that I come back to my father's house in peace, then the Lord shall be my God, and this stone which I have set as a pillar shall be God's house, and all that you give me, I will surely give a tenth to you. Jacob made a vow here. No one told him he had to do this. But voluntarily, he committed himself to this promise. If God, if this happens, if you help deliver me here, do all this stuff, I will, beyond any question, worship you as God and pay this tithe. He didn't have to do it, but it was something that he wanted to do and he chose to do. And God reminded him of it later. I'll just read to you in Genesis 31, verse 13. Jacob was in the land of his relatives and had been there a while. And God speaks to him in Genesis 31, 13. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar And where you made a vow to me, now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family. God remembered that Jacob had promised this. And he was making sure that Jacob remembered. You know, in today's society, the concept of keeping a promise is just considered so very lightly. People say, oh yeah, I'll do this, or I'll do that, or I'm going to do this. And as evidence of that, just listen to some of the campaign rhetoric this year. I mean, if you can stomach it. But look what happens. You know, they promise this, they promise that, and anything I'll promise if you'll vote for me. But what happens after the election? Do they remember those promises? Do they carry through on them? Too often, they're forgotten and conveniently ignored. And that attitude is permeating all of our society. People are very flippant as to what they commit themselves to and promise themselves to, because they, you know, it doesn't really matter if I keep that or not. They don't care. That's not how we're supposed to be. We're not to be that way, because when we make a promise, regardless of what that promise is, when we make a promise, it should be with the full intention to carry it out. When we make a promise, when we make a vow, we are obligated to keep our word. Now, granted, sometimes we forget. We're human. That happens. But our goal is to become like God. And when God makes a promise, he does not forget. He carries it out. And that leads us to the second characteristic of promises, and that is that promises are to be kept. Now, God has made a number of promises to humanity, and some of them have not come to pass yet. God also knows the right time when he's going to deliver on his promises, and we can be sure that when that time comes, he will most certainly fulfill his promise. Whatever promises that he has made, they will come about. And knowing that that is one of the character traits of God, we also realize that that is something that we need to be developing. And the Bible is very clear on this point. Let's take a look at Numbers. Chapter 30, and verses 2 to 4. Here in Numbers chapter 30, and verses 2 to 4, actually, not just these verses, but others, which I'm not going to cover today, it talks a lot about vows. But I wanted to point this out. In Numbers chapter 30, verses 2 to 4, if a man makes a vow to the Lord or swears an oath to bind himself by some agreement, he shall not break his word. He shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. Or if a woman makes a vow to the Lord and binds herself by some agreement while in her father's house in her youth, and her father hears her vow and the agreement by which she has bound herself, and her father holds his peace, then all her vows shall stand, and every agreement with which she has bound herself shall stand. As we look at this, it's clear. And it's not just a vow to God, or swears an oath to bind himself by some agreement. It's not just to God that this vow is they're talking about. It's any promise that we make. We are bound by that promise, and we shall not break our word. There's nothing in here about convenience. You shall keep your vow unless it's inconvenient for you. No, you shall keep your vow. There's nothing in here about, well, if you change your mind later, you don't have to keep your vow. That's not in there either. If your word is good If you make a vow and you make a promise, you will keep it. And we clearly see that when we make a promise, it is binding on us. Then the other aspect about that is, how do we keep a promise? Do we just kind of, okay, I promise that, and I'll do what I have to. I don't really like it. Well, keeping a promise should not be haphazard. It should not be this half-hearted effort. When we make a promise, we keep the promise, and when we keep it, it should be done fully, both in deed and in attitude. Let's take a look at Malachi. Chapter 1 and verse 14. Malachi 1:14. Now, granted, it's talking about a vow to God, but that applies in other situations too. Malachi 1, verse 14. But cursed be the deceiver who has in his flock a male and takes a vow, but sacrifices to the Lord what is blemished. For I am a great king, says the Lord of hosts, and my name is to be feared among the nations. So here we have a situation where someone has taken a vow. I'm going to make an offering to God for whatever reason. And I've got, here in my flock, a male that is perfect for offering. But later on, decides, well, that lamb or ram or whatever it is too good. I don't want to sacrifice it. So instead, he sacrifices one that is blemished. Do you see what God calls this type of person who haphazardly, who doesn't fully fulfill their vow? It's a deceiver. And we know who else God refers to as a deceiver. We do not want that attitude. A promise kept in an inferior manner is just not acceptable to God. Nor should it be acceptable to us either. That's a standard that's lower than what God sets for us, and we do not want to participate in that. And just to reinforce that, let's look back at Leviticus 22 and verse 21. Leviticus 22, verse 21. And whoever offers a sacrifice of a peace offering to the Lord to fulfill his vow, or a freewill offering from the cattle or the sheep, it must be perfect to be accepted. There shall be no defect in it. Clearly, there's a standard here that when we are fulfilling vows, when we are keeping our promises, we do it wholeheartedly. We do it fully. With an attitude that says, you know what? I promise this, and I'm going to deliver. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy in every case to deliver on a promise. As we see from these two verses and a number of other verses where you look at vows in the Old Testament, they frequently involve sacrifices and offerings. And that is the third characteristic of promises, is that they do involve sacrifice. Now, how does that apply to us? I mean, obviously we're not going to the temple offering up an animal as a sacrifice to fulfill a vow. So how does this concept that keeping a promise is a sacrifice apply to us today? Well, ask yourselves the question then, when I keep a promise, when I fulfill a vow, what am I sacrificing? What am I giving up? Think about your own life. Everything that we have has been given to us, hasn't it? Now, granted, some of the things that we have, possessions, whatever, we've earned by the work that we've done or whatever. But even then, that has come to us because of the skills, the talent, the intellect, the energy, the very life that God has given to us. We've used that and made something of it. So we have all this. And we could be very, very selfish, couldn't we? We say, oh, it's all mine. I'm going to use it just for myself and nothing else. But when you make a promise, when you set a vow, when you tell someone, I'm going to do this, you're now giving up part of what you've been given. And instead of using it for yourself, you're using it for someone else. Whether it's part of our possessions, our time, energy, talents, whatever, when we keep a promise, we're giving up something to someone else to serve them. Because we said we would. We're keeping that vow. So yeah, promises do involve a certain level of sacrifice. And keeping this in mind, these first three, leads us to the fourth characteristic that I want to bring up about promises. Because promises are commitments, and they're commitments that are to be kept, and they involve us making a sacrifice, we can see this fourth characteristic. And that is, a promise should not be made lightly or in haste. When you make a promise, think about what are you committing to. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean, I'm sorry, I can't make any promises because I don't want to do this. I don't commit myself. But take it seriously. Consider it well. We see examples from the Bible of people who made promises in haste. And there are consequences to that. We won't be turning there, but in Judges 11, we read the story of Jephthah and the vow that he made. And because he made that vow, he had to keep that vow. And the consequence of that is it changed the rest of his daughter's life. She might have had plans or thoughts one way that it was going, but it changed. And changed in a very dramatic way. Because of the promise that he made in haste. We don't want to be making promises hastily. We don't want to be in situations where we have the foxhole conversions. You know, you hear about soldiers who are in the trenches in foxholes, and it's, oh God, if you get me out of this trouble right now, I'll promise this, I'll promise that. That's not how we want to do this. Because most people in those situations, once they're out of the trouble, do they remember the promises? No. When we make a promise, you want to seriously consider it. The Bible cautions us about making vows too rashly. Because if we do that, if we're too hasty, if we do it too rashly, then later on, maybe I shouldn't have said that. We might be tempted to second guess our vow and then back out of it. So there's clear instruction here in Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 20 and verse 25. Are we to make things promises hastily? Proverbs 20, verse 25. It is a snare for a man to devote rashly something as holy, and afterwards to reconsider his vows. A snare does not have a good connotation. Snares usually lead to, at best, captivity, at worst, death. It's saying there's a problem here if you devote rashly and then later on reconsider and think, no, I don't have to keep that vow. I don't have to keep that promise. Promises should be considered carefully so that we're not tempted to break them later. So these are four characteristics of promises. that they're commitment, they be kept, they involve some sacrifice. They're not to be made in haste. And so now, since we started out looking at this as one of the words, which is a facet of our prayer, this brings us to the question, what about the promises that we make to God? Do we make promises to God? Well, yeah, we do. A couple obvious examples are when we're baptized, we are making a promise to God that we've chosen to turn from our own ways and to turn to His ways and start living by them. Now, obviously, that's not a promise that we're going to keep tomorrow or the day after, at least not fully, but we're trying. We're striving. It is our intention that at some point we will keep that promise. We want to keep that promise. Marriage is also another promise. And yes, for those of us who are married, we make vows to each other, but at the same time, we are making a promise to God, because He's the one who established marriage. And we're promising Him that we are going to strive to live this marriage in a way that is approved and acceptable to God. There are a lot of other things that we might promise to God. I'm not going to try to list them. But as you think about your own prayers, as you think about your own communications with God, what are some of the things that you've promised to God? Or have you made promises to God? Sometimes it's easy to overlook that aspect of it because we're so focused on, oh, I'm having this problem, I'm having that problem, can you help me out here, can you help this person here, that perhaps we don't always think about the promises that we might make to God. But they should be part of our conversation with God. And so when making promises to God, we want to make sure that we remember these characteristics. We make a promise to God, we want to commit ourselves to that promise, to fulfill it when we can. Because we know that when we make a promise to God, we have to keep that promise. We don't want to do something that's hasty. Don't want to do something that's lighthearted and I'll just forget about it later. And there will be a sacrifice. Because our human nature says, I don't want to change. But when we make a promise to God, that promise is basically boils down to, I will change. I will get rid of this old man and commit myself to following you. Vows ought to be sincere, and they ought to be something that we're willing to commit ourselves to, even if it does involve that sacrifice. And God expects us to keep our word. And I know we've talked about this already, but it's so critical that let's look at this again, because it's a valuable lesson. Psalm 56. Psalm 56, verse 12. Psalm 56, verse 12. Vows made to you are binding upon me, O God. I will render praises to you. Vows to God are not something that we just lightly make or we lightly cast aside. They are binding. We are held to those. They're not something we're going to wiggle out of, we're going to talk our way out of, nor should we want to. If we make a promise to God, we are bound by that promise. And just as God reminded Jacob of his vow and remembered Jacob's vow to him, God will remember the vows and promises that we make to him. So we don't have the convenience of forgetting them. And the other thing, too, is when we make promises to God, we don't want to find ourselves in the attitude of, yeah, I know that that's what I promised, but not today, or it's on my list, or I'll get to it eventually. When we make promises, when we make vows, we want to do them in such a way that we know we can fulfill them, and that when the time is right to fulfill them, we do it. We don't keep putting that off. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 4. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 and verse 4. When you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it. For he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. Very clearly. Keep your vow. And don't keep putting it off. It's a promise to God. And so, when we make promises that are reasonable to do in a shorter period of time, then we should expect to work on those and pay the vow when the time comes. So that brings us back to where we started. James chapter 5 and verse 15. James chapter 5 and verse 15, and the prayer of faith will save the sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven. Some translations will render this, the prayer of faith, as the vow of belief. And the vow of belief will save the sick, and the Lord will raise him up. And if he has committed sins, he will be forgiven. When we look at it in that manner, a vow of belief, when we look at it from that perspective, we see, in fact, that it is a call to action. Have we promised God that we fully believe in him? Do we believe that every promise he has made, he will keep? Do we believe him when he tells us that living by his ways will give us life and give us life more abundantly? Are we committed to this? To see it through to the end? It's a vow of belief. And to do that, what are we willing to sacrifice to make sure that we keep this vow by living in a manner that is acceptable to him? For all the different promises that we might make to God, this vow of belief is such a critical facet of our prayers to him. And look at what he promises as a result. When we make this vow and we keep this vow, look what God promises to us. He will forgive our sins. And ultimately, he will raise us up and give us eternal life. Truly, this is a prayer of promise.